From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're pleased and honored to welcome in Tony Rill, who is the Executive Director of the Catholic Foundation here at the Diocese of Sacramento. Tony, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob.
Good to have you with us. Tony joins us by phone. Give us a thumbnail for our listeners who might not know about the Catholic Foundation and all the great works you're involved in.
So the Catholic Foundation was established to basically handle the funds that the Catholics throughout the Diocese of Sacramento want to contribute to the diocese, and comes to the foundation, and then we disperse it to the numerous charities throughout Northern California, which is the Diocese of Sacramento.
And every year during the Catholic Appeal, I look at this. Usually you come out with a list of the various organizations that will benefit from the Catholic Appeal. And it goes on and on and on. Some of the obvious ones, but a lot of ones that aren't so obvious but are just as important.
Absolutely, yeah. The last few years, really, disaster relief has been a big portion mm-hmm. of what we do. We're able to have funds that can be dispersed immediately for fires, floods, the homeless and COVID situations that we have experienced. But then, we do a lot of things for kids at risk. We are big supporters of the Life Center, the maternity homes that right. operate throughout the diocese. And then things like camp recreation for the developmentally disabled. So there's a wide range of charities that we support.
Yeah, there's so many. Within those charities, like Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, there's a whole bunch of other functions as well. It just goes on and on.
I think last time we counted the list of groups that got our donations, it was well over 100.
Wow. Yeah, I knew it was a very, very high number. People think, let's see. They feed the hungry, pro-life, homeless. Well, that's three. It's like.
Well, and another important one that's always present is our jail ministry.
Yeah.
And there's and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Exodus Project.
Oh, yes. We've had Rabbi Seth on the program many times. And what a great program that is.
Well, it really is. And Rabbi Seth is quite a guy. I've had the pleasure of finally getting to meet him not too long ago. And was very impressed with what he's been doing. And, it all kind of feeds into the cycle because what the Exodus Project does is help people that are getting out of jail land on their feet so that they don't end up homeless and right. on the streets. And that's a big contributor to the homeless situation we have now. So
oh, sure it
Exodus
is.
Exodus Project really takes them in, gives them a place to stay, gives them the ability to hopefully find a job, to find housing, and really is a big help in getting a lot of people on their feet after being in prison.
Yeah, people don't realize that, or maybe they do. You get out of prison and you get a couple $100, and they should take you to the bus depot, and there you are. If life was difficult before, it just got a whole lot more difficult because now you have a record, and
right.
It's pretty hard to hide, and you don't want to hide it, and try to go find a job or find a place to live, and they see that record, and many people are just going to respond negatively. So that's a real, real, real challenge.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to reassimilate after being in jail, and certainly the longer you've been incarcerated, the harder it is.
Yeah, indeed. So that's
and it's also important, I think, to point out these are not violent criminals that are coming. These are, non-violent criminals that are getting out of prison.
And of course, the Exodus Project has mentors where they are assigned to a specific person who is maybe incarcerated and about to get out or has already gotten out, and they try as best they can within certain guidelines to get them back on their feet, and it can be very challenging, but I think as well it can be very very fulfilling.
Absolutely. And it's if I can go off on a side tangent, it kind of struck a chord with me. My son was in the Army, mm-hmm. and he was stationed overseas for close to 4 years. And it was amazing to me when he came home after serving the country for, quite a while, he really came home with nothing. Mm-hmm. because they don't make very much money, obviously, in the Army, especially right. in the enlisted ranks.
Right.
And it just hit me really hard that he came back after serving the country, and had he not had a family to welcome him in and support him, he had no money, no place to stay, no job, no prospects, no clothing. I mean, it really impacted me when I saw that, and I obviously he's fortunate in that he had a family to come home to, and that was not an issue for him. But I thought of all the, friends that he had made in the Army that didn't have the same situation. Yep. And so when I heard about this Exodus Project, it kind of reminded me of the same situation, a little more intense, of course, that they're coming out of prison, but similar situation where they're just thrown onto the back into this society with not a lot of resources.
Yeah, I guess in some ways it's unavoidable that happens, but they should have more programs. Number one, I mean, the government, the military, et cetera, should have more programs for that to help people reintegrate into society. And I remember my dad telling me that when he came home from World War II, he was so upset that the armed forces were segregated. And then he comes home and sees that segregation is still real in the United States of America, even though these people fought for their country and could not be integrated into the public schools, into the general society, it really struck him as horribly unfair, and he fought for sort of minority rights, if you will, for the rest of his life,
That's great.
He thought it was such an injustice.
Yeah, well, tragic, really. It's just, hopefully we've made some progress since then, but it's...
We hope so, but it's a battle every day, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so...
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, so back to the, your initial question was kind of a thumbnail about foundations, and I just wanted to add that, as a Catholic foundation for the Diocese of Sacramento, I was doing some research on other foundations across the country, and the popularity of foundations has grown dramatically over the last few years. And the reason being is that, I think a lot of donors see us as a very safe and a very secure mechanism for them to donate money to all these causes. And knowing that, every penny they donate is going directly out to support these causes that are near and dear to their hearts. And, the other aspect, I think, of foundations that people are really starting to gravitate to us for is, we create endowments, and we have a number of endowments that we hold funds for at the foundation. And, people can create an endowment that will outlive, certainly their lifetime, if they have enough funds in there, and it kind of creates a legacy of giving, and they can make sure that money goes to the specific charitable cause that they really feel deeply about. So, they find the foundation to be a great resource for their money to carry on after they're even gone, and to help causes that they were very fond of.
So dig down to that just a little bit more. So you're saying if I want to specifically benefit the Sacramento Life Center or Catholic Charities or the Food Bank or Loaves and Fishes or any one of a number of things, I can earmark it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's kind of the beauty of the foundation is that, you know, we're very transparent. And so when we receive a donation or a gift, that person typically will tell us where they want that money to go. And our job at the foundation is to make 100% certain that that money only goes to that specific cause. So, you know, some people will send us funds and just say, put it where the most need is and give us a little discretion. But the majority of the money that comes in is earmarked for a specific cause, and that's our job to make sure that it all goes to that specific cause.
Very good. Very good. So what are your biggest challenges, Tony?
You know, still coming out of COVID, you know, our challenges were getting people back into the pews at Mass, you know, for our annual Catholic appeal. But, you know, now that's really the economy and the inflation factor is probably one of the most concerning things. But, you know, again, the generosity of the people of the Diocese of Sacramento is amazing. I mean, we had our best year ever with the annual Catholic appeal last year, raising over $4 million from over 20,000 gifts. And we just launched, well, at the end of February, we launched the 2022 appeal, and we're off to a phenomenal start, ahead of where we were last year at this point. So the generosity of the people of this diocese is quite amazing.
You know, I've heard that many times. I've told this story before, but I remember during Hurricane Katrina, which I think was about 10 years ago, maybe even a little bit, maybe more than that, and in New Orleans, and was talking with, I don't know, civil defense people, et cetera, on the phone, on the show, from New Orleans, and to a person, they would say, we couldn't have done it without the Catholic Church, without St. Vincent de Paul, without the Knights of Columbus. And then they specifically noted the enormous financial contributions just from individuals in the Diocese of Sacramento specifically. Just,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it just made me swell up with pride. And I mean, I wasn't surprised, but they said nobody topped Sacramento in terms of helping out.
We have some incredibly generous people, for sure.
Yeah, and we've seen that with the terrible wildfires, you know, and many of which have been in the diocese in Paradise and Weed and Redding, but even when it was in Santa Rosa, which was not in the diocese, people from this diocese rushed to that diocese to help.
Oh, absolutely, and to prove your point there, recently we've gotten an incredible amount of donations for the Ukraine and the people of Ukraine.
Really?
I think the last time I checked, we were close to $350,000 in donations for the Ukrainian people and the church in Ukraine. So,
wow.
It's pretty amazing.
Explain how that works. Explain who were they giving the money to and how did it go from, like, take it from my checkbook to you to the chain of custody there, if you would.
So that one started on, I think it was Good Friday. We had a special collection for the Ukraine, and it's, the fund is actually for the Eastern European Church in Ukraine specifically.
Right.
And that is put out by the UCC, the United Conference of Catholic Bishops. And so we did the collection, and the funds from the collection come through. We process them at the foundation, and then we take those funds, and they go directly to the United Conference of Catholic Bishops, who disperse it to the Eastern European Church and the Ukrainian people.
Wow. And then they sort of, they're on the ground. They know where the need is.
Correct. Yeah, right. They are on site, as they say, and doing incredible work under adverse circumstances.
Boy, I'd say it's That whole thing is a mystery to me. It's mind-boggling how that can happen in this day and age, but it has, and it is ongoing. And I'm glad to hear that so many people from this diocese have contributed. It's the least we can do. I mean, we can pray. None of us seem to have, even the top levels of government, no one seemed to have the answers to this from any world government, really. You know, so it's a difficult
one. It's frightening times.
It really is. It really is. We try to, as Catholics, you know, we try to not dwell too much on the things of the world and dwell more on our prayer lives and et cetera. But, you know, we're urged to be part of this world, to take part in this world. That's one thing that makes me so proud between the Catholic Conference, the California Catholic Conference here in Sacramento that represents the entire state, all the bishops, and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, all the way up to the Vatican. We're not afraid to get involved in the issues of the day.
And
preach the gospel to all nations. And we don't just hide out and say, well, it doesn't concern me or it doesn't affect my life. We're all interconnected. So it makes me very proud to be Catholic. So
definitely. So they do a lot of incredible work.
Yes, indeed. And without regard for who is on the receiving end, excuse me, we don't care if they're Catholic or atheist or who they are. If they're
Absolutely.
In need, we're going to help them just as Christ would. And
absolutely.
So how long has the foundation existed as the foundation?
That's a great question. I think it was established in either 2003 and 2005. It's one of those years. So it's been around for 17 years, I'd say, right now. Close to, it's between 17 and 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've only been there a couple of years, so. But I'm pretty sure it was 2003.
Now, where were you before you got involved in foundation work?
My previous career was in the tech field, office technology.
Well, don't talk to me about it because I know nothing about it. Are you one of those guys I called when one of my electronics broke?
Well, not me specifically, but we had people that knew how to fix things. I was not one of those.
Every now and then I'll see the van for the Geek Squad for what is that? That's I can't remember the company. Best Buy, Best Buy.
Thanks, Dave.
Driving down the highway, and I want to flag them down and say, I'm having trouble getting my emails. Indeed. So it must be satisfying work.
It is. It's great. It's been a lot of fun, and I've learned a lot about, a lot more about the Catholic Church than I ever knew, and really had no idea to the depth of the work that goes on behind the scenes that, you know, really no one, not many people give us credit for.
Yeah, you know, and you know, it's on the one hand, you're not supposed to toot your own horn. It's just not our style. But on the other hand, if sometimes people will challenge, you're a Catholic, and they've got all these issues and they want to talk about them. And I said, you know, just imagine if the Catholic Church didn't exist, just right here in Northern California.
Right.
Look at all, there wouldn't even be a safety net, no less holes in the safety net. You know, between all the, like you named over 100 things that the appeal's going for, and leave all, I mean, down in Solano County, we were helping out with rent assistance. You know, it's just.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. Up in Chico from the Paradise Fire, we were helping people cut red tape with FEMA. All these, any way we can help, we're going to help. And then you forget about, you know, the hospitals and the schools and everything else that the church contributes to the you know, pursuit of happiness in this diocese and around the state. You know, it's.
Well, I tell you, one of the most impressive stories I've read was about how the Sisters of Mercy started the Mercy Hospital in Sacramento, where, you know, they were one of the first hospitals in this area.
Period.
And just did an absolutely, it was an amazing undertaking.
Yeah, and, I mean, the hospitals and schools, they came up on a boat from San Francisco, five of them, on a Friday, and landed, you know, I guess down Old Sacramento there. And by Monday, they had a school open.
That's incredible.
With 65 students. And there were ads in the Sacramento Bee that said specifically, everyone welcome. You need not be Catholic. Everyone welcome. You know, and it wasn't a very Catholic town at the time. And editorials in the Sacramento Bee were just lauding the sisters for all the great work they were doing in the city. It just 1857.
They truly were amazing.
Yeah, to the point where they even have, you know, a statue commemorating them in front of on the grounds of the state capitol. So,
which is pretty amazing.
Amazing. And then, as you say, you know, the opening the hospitals and which survive to this day, and the schools that opened to the survive to this day. It's just really, really wonderful stuff. So, the appeal is sort of ongoing, right? And 25% goes back to your home diocese, your home parish.
So, yeah, 25% of the money goes back to the parish to work in the on their local, you know, service ministries. 25% goes towards Catholic school education, tuition assistance, and also tuition assistance and funding for seminarians.
Very good. Very good.
Well, and then the 50% goes to the charities. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And take your pick. There's a million. And you've got some wonderful, you know, ways for people to have endowments and et cetera. What's the best way for somebody to get a hold of you? If somebody has an idea, somebody wants to donate, somebody wants to just talk about it.
Yeah, you know, if you go on our website, you can find our information at the scd.org. Just look for the Catholic Foundation, and our contact information is there. Just call or send us an email, and we can get all of your questions answered.
Very good. Very good. Well, Tony, keep up the good work, and don't hesitate to give us a shout. We love what you guys do.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thanks for having me on.
Very good. God bless. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
That's
you
Tony.
Have a great
Tony,
night.
Yeah, you too. That's Tony Real, who is the head of the executive director of the Catholic Foundation here for the Diocese of Sacramento. Go to scd.org. That's sacramentocatholicdiocese.org, scd.org. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is James McCormick, President and CEO of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for that wonderful introduction, and thanks for all the great performances and great public service the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra does here in the greater Sacramento area. Well, we have had a number of listening sessions. Hopefully people are having listening sessions with the Bishop's Hour, but a number of listening sessions is part of the synod process here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And we're pleased to welcome in one of the participants in the synod at St. Teresa of Avila Parish in Auburn is Joe Offer. Joe, good day to you.
Hello.
Joe.
Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you as well. I'm looking at your picture there, sitting in the pews at St. Teresa of Avila Church. Tell us a little bit about your parish.
Well, St. Teresa's is an interesting parish. It was founded as St. Teresa's sometime in the 1800s, and it burned down in 1910. And when they rebuilt, they named it St. Joseph's. And so that was church is still there, St. Joseph's in Auburn. And then the school was only four classrooms, so in 1960 they moved to the far outskirts of Auburn and built St. Joseph's School on Atwood Road.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1990, and the church was too small for mass, so they started having mass in the school gym. And then in 1994, they built St. Teresa's Church. And it was all one parish until 2005 when St. Teresa's became a separate parish.
Very good. And what street is that on?
Historic parish with a historic name.
Yes, yes. What street is St. Teresa of Avila?
It's on Atwood Road.
That's on Atwood Road,
North
yeah.
Auburn.
Yeah, yeah.
Right near the DeWitt Center.
Yeah, and what a beautiful parish, and St. Joseph, too, and what a great community Auburn is. It strikes me as a town that's very close-knit, and some groups have lived there for generations.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting. I've only been here for 20 years, but I've been visiting Auburn for 40 or 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the parish is very interesting. We have a lot of joint activities between the two parishes, the two churches.
Mm-hmm. So you are the chair of the pastoral council there?
Correct.
What does that role involve?
Well, I've been in parish. I was in St. John Vianney Parish in Rancho Cordova before this, and so I've been on parish council. I think this is probably the third time, and each time I've been on for about 5 years. In general, it's rather than being an active body, it's a consultative body.
Mm-hmm.
Pastors are supposed to speak honestly with the members of the parish council and consult with them on any major decisions. Sometimes I've been through a number of pastors person I've had to train some of them to consult with us before they make their decisions.
So the every parish has its own issues, I guess. Talk a little bit about when you first heard of the synod process. What did you anticipate from it?
It's interesting. I think I heard about it 3 or 4 years ago, and there's been very little in the press or from the pulpit about it all these times. And I was wondering if Sacramento Diocese was going to be doing anything about it at all. And then last fall, I got a call asking parish council presidents to operate listening sessions in our parish. And they gave us a training session on Zoom, and gave us a lot of materials to prepare us, and then we had our listening sessions just after the first of the year.
So how did you...
And it was a good process.
How did you recruit, for want of a better word, recruit people to come participate? Because I know they wanted a real diversity of people coming to this, young and old, and maybe even people have fallen away, et cetera. How did you reach out and get people to come?
Well, we tried, but we didn't have much success getting anyone but church-going Catholics.
Uh-huh.
But and we were happy with those results. But we couldn't come up with ways to generate interest among people that aren't going to church.
Yeah, that's a difficult chore for sure.
Yeah. So what we did is we announced it in the parish bulletin a few weeks ahead of time, and then the Sunday before, we had people outside the church with clipboards signing people up, and then we had sessions available for them on a Thursday night and on a Sunday night. We probably should have had one in the afternoon for people that couldn't get out at night, but we did pretty well. We had about 50 to 60 people participate.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we also had, instead of the parish council meeting, we had a listening session for the parish council to train people to conduct these sessions, and that worked well, too. So we had one Spanish language session and two English language sessions, and we had three English language sessions, and then another session for the parish council. So five altogether.
So, how, as one of the facilitators, how did you open the meeting with the group?
Well, we had the whole whoever was there on that day gathered together and watched the video from the bishop mm-hmm. at the beginning,
right.
and then we split the group up into groups of about 10 people in a circle in different places in the church, and before we at the very beginning we had the pastor pray the synod prayer with us and give us a blessing,
mm-hmm.
and then. And he left us on our own, and because the pastors were not supposed to participate in the listening sessions themselves.
Right.
But it was a good thing to have him there to give his blessing to the whole thing.
So in the Herald, you're quoted as saying, I hope that the diocese and the church in general can carry on with this, that we do what we can to teach people to listen to each other. My theory is that it's not the content of what was discussed that is important, but the beauty of it was that the sessions were an exercise in synodality. Expand on that a little bit. These were listening sessions.
Right. I was worried about this because I thought it might be just a complaint session.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at what other dioceses did, and some of them got into the nitty-gritty of what the parish does, what the diocese does. And the Sacramento Diocese, I thought, had a brilliant solution because we built the listening sessions on the gospel about the multiplication of the loaves and fishes.
Right.
And had people look at a picture of the multiplication of loaves and fishes and contemplate that, and then relate that to participation in our parish. And the incident with Jesus feeding the 5,000 or the 4,000 was very similar to a parish gathering at Mass where people are there having a meal with Jesus. And to place it in the gospel like that took away all of the idea of complaining and made it a much more positive session.
Mm-hmm.
So every person had, there were four questions, and each person had 3 minutes to answer each question, and without interruption. So that person had the floor for 3 minutes. Four times during the two-hour session.
Mm-hmm.
People listened really appreciated what other people had to say, and they really put their hearts into the process.
Mm-hmm.
Even people that had been reluctant at first enjoyed it.
That's really wonderful to hear. Have you talked to anybody from other parishes that and what the results, you know, their impression of their synod sessions?
Yes, I got a text from a deacon today, and he said nothing has been said in his parish about it at all, which surprised me. And I was asking another parish in Placer County and didn't really get any specific information. So I don't really know what's happening in the rest of the diocese with these listening sessions.
But you thought this was productive.
Yes, but I'm not sure how widespread it was. Every parish was supposed to do this, and their deadline was February 15th. So if it hasn't been done, I guess it won't be done. Many people in our parish hoped that we would do this quite often, maybe once a year or once every 6 months, to just explore a question based on the gospel. It worked very well for us. Now, we have a deacon that used to be here at St. Teresa's. His name is Dave Ford, and he's moved on to the Monterey Diocese, and they had a very active program.
Mm-hmm.
Of listening sessions in the Monterey Diocese. In fact, he was quoted in quite a bit of coverage about him and his program in America magazine.
Oh, really? Oh, I'll have to look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you say, referring to some of the comments he had received through adult faith education, that Bible study, you say you applaud the synodal process of listening as the best way to come together and truly listen, rather than make presumptions. I think it's a great statement, and it's really what I've heard. We've talked to a number of people from other parishes about their synodal process, and I'm hearing the same thing, that people were very heartened by it, thought that it was very valuable.
Yeah, it seems to have been. I'm a Mercy associate, and so usually I hear about other parishes through the Mercy associates, because we come from parishes all over the diocese. But it does seem like maybe this wasn't as successful as it could have been, and maybe we need to, the synod lasts for 3 years, and maybe we need to work on this as a diocese more intently and make a second try at it, because I think the first time nobody knew what was happening, and so some people didn't come on board. But I think if we did it again, maybe somewhat different, but something like this, I think we might be more successful the second time around.
No, that's a good idea. as I understand it, you had a note taker who sort of recorded the various comments and not by name or anything like that, not trying to track anybody, but just give a general sense of what went on and what was said, and those would be forwarded to the diocese.
Correct.
And at some point they go on to the USCB and Washington D.C., the National Organization of Bishops, and then eventually to Rome for the Synod of Bishops.
Yes, and as I said in the article, I found that maybe it wasn't so important what the content of those notes is. It's more important the fact that we sat together as fellow parishioners and talked about what was deep in our hearts rather than talking about bowling parties or... Uh-huh. or it seems like too often the communication between parishioners is more about social things rather than faith sharing. And I think that faith sharing is a very important part of parish life.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you note in the Catholic Herald story that there were two prevalent themes that surfaced, the Eucharist and the parish community. Explain that a little bit.
Well, people seem to have all kinds of different theories about Eucharist, and some people tend to spend a lot of their time during communion watching other people and passing judgment on whether the other people are correct in their ways of receiving communion or whether they're adequately prepared for communion.
You've noticed that too, huh, Joe?
Oh, yeah. I sometimes serve as a Eucharistic minister, and I'm a sacristan, so that's mm-hmm. my usual job, but if somebody's missing, I'll fill in. And I love distributing communion and looking people in the face, and I think that the people who come to Mass on Sunday and the people who receive communion really do believe that this is the body and blood of Christ.
Absolutely.
That's
a really good point. I've noticed that, and it isn't just on the real presence. It's on a whole range of issues. You'll see these polls, some of them done by religious organizations, some of them done by sort of the normal Gallup, those kinds of polls. And they'll say so-and-so of Catholics, and it's a phone poll where they say, what's your religion? And just about anybody that's baptized Catholic will say Catholic, and good for them. I'm not going to judge them for whether they're going to Mass or not, or where they are in their life. But you're very right when they say, well, how often do you attend Mass? The demographic changes drastically, and you're right. Maybe a third of everybody polled that said they were Catholic says they believe in the real presence. Those who go to Mass every Sunday, like you say, it's 80-90%. And
now, the most recent survey I've seen on this question was conducted by CARA, which is the Center for the Applied Research of the Apostolate
right.
at Georgetown University. And that it was a much more detailed survey, and it was conducted by Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave a much deeper insight, and I was quite heartened by that survey, because it did give a much more positive view of what Catholics who attend Mass and receive communion actually believe.
So yeah,
I think they're better than that. The other question that people had in the listening sessions was about COVID and how the church responded. And responded well and was protecting me by shutting down Mass and having it online for a whole year. But there were many people that were quite upset and thought that the bishops had sold out to the government and that the church had been coerced into closing down. And they felt we should have bitten the bullet and stayed open on Sundays all through the pandemic. So there was some disagreement in that. Auburn is a conservative place, I think that probably the majority of people up here thought that it was wrong for the churches to close down. I was in the minority because I thought that was a good thing.
Yeah, I'm at St. James in Davis, and it was almost universal that people thought that closing down was the prudent thing to do, you know. And diocese has 20 counties, and there are some counties that are, I don't know, I don't even like the labels, but there are some that are more to one side of thinking, and others that are, it's very diverse in that way. That will be reflected in the various parishes, for sure.
Yeah, most of the Mercy Associates are in Sacramento, and most of them seem to have parishes where people approved of shutting things down. I only know of two parishioners here who died of COVID,
mm-hmm.
and one was vaccinated and one was not.
Right.
And the one who was vaccinated was also over 85, so...
Mm-hmm.
And in ill health, so he died in a nursing home.
Yeah, and you know, there's anecdotal stories that can prove anything, you know, about it. It's a free world, and it's everybody's choice. But the bishops, Bishop Soto, and the bishops of our country, and the Pope. We're all very clear about at least our duty to protect others. If not vaccinating ourselves, at least removing yourself from areas where you might contract it and then pass it on unwittingly to somebody who's vulnerable. So.
Yeah, and I think that Bishop Solo handled it quite well.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. With you know, and it was not an easy job. I can't imagine being a bishop in charge of over 100 parishes in 20 counties, a very diverse diocese, and saying, you know, we have to go to you know, masks, number one. We're going to urge people to be vaccinated. We're going to, you know, not have mass in person for a while, or with just a very small handful of people. And we're going to put it on the TV. We're going to stream it live. And those are difficult decisions for anybody to make. Yeah, I think he handled it very, very well.
Yeah. And I enjoyed attending Mass online. And also, I would often attend in my own parish, and then also... I like the one from the cathedral in Chicago with Cardinal Kupich.
Right, right.
And also I was in the seminary in Milwaukee for 8 years, and so I got to watch online to see some of my former classmates celebrate Mass.
Oh, how wonderful!
Kind of nice too. I
didn't know that about you, Joe. That's very. Are you a native of that of Wisconsin?
No, I was born in Detroit. Moved to Wisconsin when I was 9, so I consider myself a Wisconsinite. But I moved to California in 1971. So, you know, that's
only 51 years here. You're a newcomer.
Yeah. Hey, you're quick at math.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, that's great. That is uh, That's wonderful. Joe, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to be with us and taking the time to be a part of this synod and giving your time to the Catholic Herald as well to tell what you think. And I think you're probably right. If we do it again, we'll get even better participation.
I hope so.
Great.
It's nice to finally meet you. I've listened to you off and on through the years, and it's nice to have your program.
Well, that's very kind of you. It's a labor of love. I feel very, very privileged to have the opportunity to be on the air every day talking about our great Catholic faith. So thank you, and thank you for all you do, and God bless you and everybody up there in Auburn.
And God bless you, too.
Hey, thanks so much, Joe. That's Joe Offer from St. Teresa of Avila Parish up in Auburn. We should tell you that Bishop Soto has issued a statement, and maybe this is a new word, maybe it's not a new word to some people, observant of Rogation Days on May the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. You say, what's Rogation? Well, we'll tell you. It's an ancient tradition of Rogation Days. The bishop is inviting everyone to participate. The Office of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns is going to provide information as an aid to the observance of Rogation Days. This is the words from the bishop as well. It's just a remarkable. People wonder, well, what is this? Well, it's a good time to reflect on the themes of integral ecology, environmental justice, care for our common home. And as called for by the encyclical from Pope Francis, Laudato Si, May 22nd to the 29th has been designated as Laudato Si Week. During the Rogation Days, parishes are invited to pray for the care of the creation that cares for us. The Eucharist, as well as many of the sacraments, are celebrated with the fruits of creation, bread, wine, water, and oil. In every Mass, the fruits of the earth and the work of human hands become for us the body and blood of Christ. These are included in a letter from Miriam Sammartino, who is the Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. Included in the general intercessions are prayers for rain, prayers for a bountiful harvest, prayers for contrition and the acknowledgement of our role as the stewards of the creation God has entrusted to us, prayers for farmers and all those who labor in the fields, and prayers for the protection of human life, especially the unborn and the frail elderly. And we should note that St. Isidore is recognized as the patron of farmers due to his faithful attendance at daily Mass before going out to labor in the fields. You know who that reminds me of is Cesar Chavez. He was a daily communicant and then would labor as well and labor in the fields and then labor as forming unions and et cetera here in California. The Feast of St. Isidore the Farmer is May 15th, which is a Sunday. And, of course, we have St. Isidore Parish up in Yuba City, which is right in the middle of farm country. So it's all very much tied together. We'll talk more about the days of Rogation, which will be May 23rd, 24th, and 25th as we get closer to that date. Yes, yes.
Play. I always remember that one with St. Isidore the Farmer because it was one of the few that had a title. Like, it was, you know, there was always St. John the Baptist.
But a lot of them are just Saint so and so, you know, and you may see what they're the patron saint of and stuff, but right. Yeah, St. Isidore the Farmer.
It's kind of obvious.
What yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's probably why they picked that name. We don't really know. Father Blaise Berg, his parents were instrumental in the founding of St. Isidore Parish up in Yuba City. Yeah.
Yeah. We should get him on and talk about it.
And his family was involved in the nursery business, not nursery schools, right. Nursery like almond orchards and walnut orchards and, you know, selling the trees that mm-hmm. they plant.
So. I wanted to come on and remind everybody about subscribing to the podcast.
Yes.
So go to any subscription app that you use for podcasts. We should be on at least the most major ones. You just go on and get to the app, click or go and type in the Sacramento Bishop's Hour and subscribe. Doesn't cost you anything, doesn't get spammed by anything. No one's going to call you in the middle of the night and ask for your money. Have you paid for?
You won't be on any lists.
No. They won't have you pay to get out of some weird prison with Home Depot cards. Nothing like that. It's just going to be anytime you open the app, a little indicator will show up telling you how many episodes you haven't listened to yet. So you know how many you can use to catch up on. I know at the end of the month I'm going to be going on a trip with my family, and it's always good to have podcasts loaded up, ready to go.
Yep.
So it's, we only do hour shows, so you can pack a few into like a good trip to Yosemite or something.
Yeah, you can listen while you're... I remember with one of my teenage daughters, I had mentioned that she was in Davis, she was working in the rotating winter shelter for the homeless. It would rotate from one church would in town would take it for serving a dinner and then overnight and then breakfast for the homeless, and then the next week it would be another church in Davis. And the rotating winter shelter, people get dizzy. And I mentioned her, and she says, "Oh, can I listen to it?" And I said, "Yeah." I says, it's all archived and stuff. And she says, "Well, show me." And I said, "I don't have a clue." And in 30 seconds,
right,
she figures it out. Yeah, because she's a teenager,
I've known you for 15 years, and I should know not to ask you. Can you show me how to do that on my phone?
You can ask me the best burger place in Wairika. But
on my trip, I'm going to be asking you where to go. Even though I grew up where I'm going, I know you probably know a better burger place than me. Do that. And if you can't do that, if that seems too much for you, that's fine. You can always listen on our website, the scd.org. You go down, scroll down a little bit, you'll see a little button for the Bishop's Hour. You click on that, listen to past shows at least a week, I think. I think they rotate every week. And if you don't want to do any of that, then you can also listen at night on Relevant Radio, 9 o'clock.
Monday. Yeah, on a real radio.
Radio.
Yeah.
For those of you who are still doing that.
But, it's the beauty. I mean, I've been in radio for a long time, and I've done live radio, most of it. And I know, like, I used to be on KFBK every night, 9 to midnight. And if you missed it, you missed it.
Yep.
It was gone. It was off in the ozone somewhere, And
catch the best of
it. And that was that. Somebody literally taped it, and maybe they replayed it or something. But you, if you didn't have nine to midnight, and of course people would call me after a Kings game, and say, "What about that play? And what about this play?" And I'd say, "Well, during the Kings game, I was actually on the radio. They just assumed you were watching the Kings game with them."
Too many movies are shown, and people radio personalities with big giant screens in their room.
Yeah,
you just get way too distracted.
Yeah. So indeed. Well, it's thanks, Gabe, for all that. That's going to do it for us for today. Appreciate you all listening. God bless everyone. We'll talk to you again soon.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just. Death. You call me into life. some reconciled.